MyMac Podcast number 115, coming to you from Michigan, Virginia, and Saudi Arabia.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And it's a little different for me again this week. I am at my alternate recording studio, which happens to be home. Chad Perry's off this week, but I'm not alone. I've got Guy Searle. Hi, Guy.
Hello, hello.
And Mazen is with us all the way from Saudi Arabia, where, as we record, it's almost 2:30 a.m.
Hi, everyone. How are you doing?
That's what I call dedication.
Or insanity. It's one of the two.
Okay, well, that works, too.
I'll pick insanity then.
For 200, Alex.
That's right. So we don't really have a central topic. We'll go into a little bit on what's going on in the Mac world. I don't really want to talk about the iPhone too much. Although Mazen,
you... Womp, 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 womp.
What, was that you, Guy?
Yeah, it was me.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. You did write an interesting article about the impact of the iPhone that was linked on quite a few different Mac websites. They linked to your story about what the cultural and technological whatever, what it means for everybody in your country. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Actually, the interesting part is I posted a blog post on the MyMac site talking about that Mac game night, and it was my first, to tell you the truth. And when I was sitting there, the interesting part was they started to talk about the iPhone again, and people were saying that they're gonna buy the iPhone when it ships out in June, whether it's an unlocked SIM or a locked SIM. They don't care. I mean, and I told them, hey guys, I mean, come on, are you gonna buy a phone that, you know, won't work as a phone if it's locked? They said, we don't care. We like it. It's an iPod and it's a communicator device, so that's fine for us. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, how big is Apple in Saudi Arabia?
Well, that's the thing, Tim. The Mac groups, let's say, they're trying their best to spread it out, but unfortunately, the dealer down there is not doing a good job to help spread the Macs around there. I mean, they're selling barely some products like iPods and stuff. They're just like any other Joe Schmo seller who would sell just iPods. They're not really
electric
concerned
reseller,
about...
Electronic
yeah, I mean,
reseller.
They're... Exactly. I mean, they're not really concerned about selling Macs that much. And, I mean, I talked to you about this, and hopefully when this other article comes out, it should show exactly how, you know, things are going on and how desperate we are to get Macs. It's very difficult to get them around here.
Hmm. So if I had millions and billions of dollars, I should set up shop in Saudi Arabia and I'd clean up, right?
Well, oh yeah, big time. I mean, I have a friend of mine. He's the Apple ambassador, and I'm working on an interview with him about, you know, his background and all that. And the guy invested a lot of money to open up a Apple reseller store. And he told me, I mean, I was shocked when I asked him about this, and he told me that they sell the Macs before they even reach our coast.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, people just book it and pay the advance in some cases just to guarantee that they will get their Macs. And, yeah, go ahead.
You know what the best thing about being an Apple ambassador is?
No idea. What's that?
No parking tickets.
Oh, really?
No, well, that's only in New York.
Okay.
Well, we don't get any of that. I mean, parking is free around here, so in most cases. So we don't care. I mean, that's not an advantage over here.
Well, so you know, Mazen, one thing you might want to do is something I did. I had a trip out to Boise, Idaho, and found a Mac reseller out there that had a pretty neat setup, and I did a feature article on it, including pictures.
Actually, I'm planning on both. I'm planning on the interview with him, you know, because I got a lot of information. I'm just editing the whole thing, and I'll send it to Tim when it's finally done. and it exposed a lot of good information about the community in Saudi Arabia and how big of, you know, let's say the numbers are. The other thing is I'm thinking of going up to his store and taking, you know, pictures, and I might even send over some video if, Tim, you're interested.
Absolutely. You know I am.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could send you the some videos, and you know, we could talk about even the future plans. He's planning on opening up a very nice club down there to gather all the Mac users.
Well, so, we've talked about
An on-site podcast.
Absolutely. Speaking of podcast, this isn't your first podcast, is it, Mazin?
No. I have my own podcast. Can I say the name of my website?
Absolutely. Promote it.
All right, thank you.
Pimp that sucker.
Yeah, all right. It's called explorepod.com. It's a travel website or travel podcast that covers both video and audio, you know, going to all the countries I've been to and, you know, showing people a lot of videos and audio. And, you know, the best part about it is that I focus on showing people where they should really go and what to watch out, you know, from, you know, touts,
right,
and stuff like that. I mean, these are the real important and very hard to, you know, come about types of information.
Well, looking at the website, I can see that you've got podcasts, and these are enhanced podcasts, correct?
Well, actually, I provide both enhanced AACs and MP3s and MOVs for videos.
It's better to see the enhanced, I think, because you can actually see the pictures that you're talking about.
Exactly. I add the pictures, I add the bookmarks, and it's all there. I mean, I promote the AACs. Go ahead, Guy.
I was going to ask, are you doing all of that in GarageBand?
I'm doing it in iMovie if it's a video, GarageBand if it's audio. And I'm not really good at this, but I'm trying my best. I mean, I'm not good at...
Oh, they're fantastic. They're great. Right now, you've got some from Antwerp and Brussels and Belgium. I haven't listened to the one from Nepal yet. And the taxi story looks really interesting. I haven't listened to that one yet either.
Oh, taxi's going to be fun overseas.
And you've got one from Istanbul, Turkey, too.
Oh, nice place.
Yeah, yeah. Up until now, I've got about 17 episodes, and I'm working now on episode 18 and 19, and you know, bringing it up to 20.
One of the neat things about publishing mymac.com is the wide variety of people that I get to meet in my role as the publisher and owner of the site, and I've tried to bring in people that have different views than I have, and from different parts of the world. I mean, we have now people from Australia, Germany, England, Canada, and Saudi Arabia. I mean,
yeah. Well,
can't remember the guy's name though.
I know.
Yeah, but let me add one thing, Tim. Though, I mean, since I started publishing my since you started publishing my articles on the MyMac site, I thought at the beginning that I was kind of the only Mac user. I mean, ignorant enough to think that, but I thought I was the only one down there. And after I started to, you know, publish the articles on the MyMac website, a lot of people started to contact me from Turkey, Singapore, Malaysia, UAE, Saudi Arabia. I mean, the whole thing went crazy. And they're contacting me, asking me about where to buy the Macs in Saudi Arabia or the region around them. So I'm kind of, you know, looking at myself as your ambassador to the rest of the world somehow.
Ah, we appreciate it. And that's one of the things that we wanted to focus on today is what the internet in general and Macs and all these new technologies are really doing to the world, how it's not necessarily breaking down, but it is having an impact on culture, on ethnic, political, racial,
diverse.
I mean, it seems to be very diverse, and it's bringing people together. If you watch old sci-fi movies, it always seemed like the technologies were segmenting countries and different people. And now, when we have this technology, it's doing just the opposite. It seems to me that it's bringing different cultures together. I mean, who would have thought 10 years ago that we would be talking without a telephone? You in Saudi Arabia, me here in Michigan, and Guy in Virginia. For free, absolutely.
Free, yeah.
And that we have so much in common.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think from my perspective, what the internet and the whole, you know, communication and the computers and the, you know, PCs or Macs, but the whole concept really, you know, shattered down all the walls and barriers we have in between us, and we discovered that, hey, look at this guy on the other side. He's just like us, you know?
Right.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, yeah, I mean, and this is really great. I mean, we're now getting closer and closer to each other, and we're, in a way, from my perspective at least, we're in a way learning from each other. I mean, we get to, you know, share our knowledge because we've been like, you know, encapsulated in an area, for example, for a very long time, and now we're exposed to each other, so we could exchange all the knowledge we gathered through time.
Of course, that exposure can lead to learning differences, hopefully, and this has always been my hope, that those differences would become more respected, and
yes,
people would be more respectful of the differences in culture and whatever happened, political, ethnic. I mean, in the United States, we've had a racial problem for, well, pretty much the entire
history
of this of this United States. But really, there's no race at MyMac.com. Nobody, there is no race. There is no ethnic, there is no, you know, I like to say there's no politics, but that's obviously not true. There are some political
David Avery,
discussions.
Excuse me.
But I'm stumbling over the right words to say, but it just seems to me that what the internet is doing is, for the most part, positive. Yes, there's people stealing music and movies. Yes, there's a lot of hate websites. There's a lot of attacking other people. But for the most part, I think it's bringing people together. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, I agree 100%. How about you, Guy?
Well, I would say so, and Mazen kind of hit on this earlier.
You almost said Mazen, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Bobbert. So he was talking about how it was, you know, breaking down the walls, and one of those walls that have created so many problems between different races and cultures and religions, and, you know, any kind of divide you can think of, has been a lack of communication. And what the internet does, and this is a good example with Skype or iChat or, you know, some other PC technology, is that it breaks down those walls.
Yeah, I think it takes the fear of the unknown, of the differences in perspectives away from people.
And it breaks down the whole concept of us and them, you know, when you're going against them because, you know, they're different or they're not like us. This shows people that, no, they are like us. We're not
exactly
different. We're the same race. We're just humans. I mean, interesting enough, half an hour ago, I just logged a post on my blog site talking about color and race and the whole issue. I mean, it was a coincidence somehow.
I don't think so. I think this is a topic that is going to come to the forefront the more use that the internet gets worldwide.
Exactly.
I think once a continent like Africa really comes online, I think you're going to see some major changes in a part of the world that really, really needs to have some changes brought to it. There's literally, right now, people being slaughtered that we don't know anything about.
It's true. And
you start bringing these countries and these people online to tell their stories, and you're going to see some changes. And I think it's going to be positive changes.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it on the news about the bloggers everywhere, especially around this region, where they get oppressed and, roughed up a bit by their governments. And, these things are happening, and people in the, let's say, in the Western Hemisphere are hearing it and reading it and knowing about it. So things are changing, and they are changing so fast that governments are not really picking up on it.
No,
well, a lot of governments are afraid of that kind of change. I mean, you look at, for example, North Korea. They almost no one there, unless you're high up in the government, has internet access because they don't want people to find out how different it is everywhere else.
And I think that's eventually going to break down, and those changes are going to happen. I don't think that there's. Mazen and I were talking earlier, Guy, before you joined us, how governments, for the most part, at least from my experience, are mostly reactive. They're not proactive. But what the internet's going to do, the more it becomes pervasive throughout the entire planet, is this going to make governments be more proactive, and hopefully in a good way?
Exactly. And technology is really pushing it and making it even easier and easier every day and cheaper for certain countries to adapt to this new technology. And that's a great thing, I mean, if you think about it. I mean, taking advantage of all these new technologies, and they're getting cheaper and cheaper and making it easier and, affordable for the just, you know, normal customer or normal Joe to get into it. And that's really great. I mean, what the computer industry and the way they're pushing things, the innovative part of the whole process is just amazing.
Obviously, the thing that brought the three of us together is Macintosh computers, so let's talk about that for a little bit. What computer are you using,
Mazin? I'm using a PowerBook G4. That's my main machine. That was my first Mac. And by the way, I'm a new switcher. I mean, it's been like 3 years now. But since I switched, I mean, I became a crusader for the Mac side. And abandon the PC altogether, and that's it. I mean, once you go Mac, you never go back.
What are you using now, Guy, right now? You're still using that 24-inch iMac, correct?
No, I gave it up for a
Dell
200,
laptop?
Yeah, 233 megahertz Dell 8-inch laptop.
Speaking of the Windows world, did you see that I guess iTunes isn't playing nicely with Vista?
No.
Or is it that way, or is it the other way around? Is Vista not playing nice with iTunes?
Well, if they're not working together, I got to say that's probably on the onus is on Apple to make iTunes work correctly with Vista.
Well, that's true.
Microsoft is not going to change their operating system to take advantage of one application. It's just not going to happen.
Certainly not for Apple.
No, I would imagine not.
Oh, we're sorry. We're going to make all these changes just for you.
Now, do either of you plan on picking up a copy of Vista eventually?
No way.
You know, I've been thinking about that because this is the first computer I have or I've had in my life that's been capable of running Windows. And I keep thinking, wow, I could really just put Windows on and then I could, and I just can't think of anything I want it for.
Yeah. Well, there's some things that Windows does, some applications that you can't get on the Mac, unfortunately.
Half-life.
Virtualization is obviously a good choice. And at this point, there's really no need to upgrade to Vista. There's nothing for a Mac user that you're going to get of benefit from Vista, I don't think.
Well, but, I think Vista has better DRM.
yeah.
It's certainly more pervasive.
I said more benefit.
Oh, my mistake. Sorry.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, it is benefit, but not for the consumer.
No, well, very little seems to be done for the consumer, unfortunately.
That's right.
I'm going to get a copy of it. Microsoft's going to ship a copy out to me. I was hoping to get it today, but it hasn't arrived yet. And I'm going to put it on the MacBook Pro. We'll see how it runs, and I'll talk about it more in the future. One of the things I did want to talk about, and I'm going to do a short little review of this later after we get done with recording this segment, is the Griffin iTalk Pro. John Demorowski did a written review up at mymac.com for it, and I thought this would be a really cool piece of hardware to review on the podcast, since that's what it's for, is to record yourself or a concert or whatever. But it has just excellent clarity. It's just amazing. It's just this little black dongle that plugs into the bottom of your iPod, and wow. When you guys listen back to this podcast, when I get to that part of the podcast, I think you could be really surprised on the audio quality of this little device. It's quite neat.
It's a voice recorder, right?
Yep. What you do is you plug it into the bottom of the iPod, video iPod, and there's this little red button that you push, and once you push it, it starts recording automatically. You don't have to install any software. The iPod automatically recognizes it as a high-quality microphone, and it just records it right onto the hard drive of the iPod.
Well, doesn't that also work with the second-generation Nano? Don't they have a version of that?
Yes, I do believe they do. I think it's the same version. They might have one that's smaller, but I saw somebody at Macworld Expo had one.
It was Bill Palmer.
It was Bill Palmer. He had one on
Nano. Let's talk about iProng some more.
Yeah, a little bit more iProng. But yeah, it works great. I'm really looking forward to it. Is this something, Mazin, that you think would benefit you, being out on the road doing podcasts? Is that something that you'd be interested in?
Well, that's why I was asking you. I mean, I use a voice recorder just to remind me of things. And that voice recorder doesn't play nice with my Mac, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're saying that this thing just plugs to my video or iPod with video. I mean, that would be awesome. I mean,
you just hit a button, start recording, and when you're done, you hit the button again, and it stops recording.
Made by Griffin?
That's Griffin Technologies. When you plug it into your Mac, you have to have the option. You have to have it turned on in iTunes to mount your iPod on your desktop. You open up your iPod and drag them off. Yeah, it's just that simple.
I think even the iPod with video is just by default. It does that, right?
Yes.
Or you could just I think that's going by default. So, yeah, that would be cool. I mean, recording on the go.
What kind of file does it make?
I believe it's an MP4 file. I have to.
But non-DRM'd.
No, it's not DRM. Of course not.
Okay.
No.
Of course not.
No, that it wouldn't sell to anybody. No. Speaking of DRM, seems to be the big topic on a lot of podcasts lately. A lot of blogs. Microsoft obviously has low-level DRM built into. I mean, you can't even take the DRM out of Vista. It's so
pervasive.
Yeah, so deep inside the core of that OS. What do you guys think? Do you think DRM is becoming a problem in this world that we live in?
Guy?
Oh, you're waiting for me. Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It really depends on what the DRM is intended to do. If you're talking about the type of DRM that you have with iTunes or the Zune Marketplace or the Plays for Sure, really all that's there to do is prevent you from taking that same file and giving it to 10,000 of your closest friends. And, you know, I mean, copyright owners have the right to protect the material that they've spent good money to create.
But what about fair use? For instance, I just did that review of the DVD 21X2. I don't think that name could be
that out really well.
You know, it's a piece of software that basically allows me to take a commercial DVD and shrink it down so it will fit on a consumer blank 4.7 gigabyte DVD. And it works fabulously. There's almost no loss in quality in sound or video. It works just clicking a couple buttons. Of course, I need another software to rip that DVD to my hard drive to begin with, which is what I use Mac the Ripper for. And
does Mac the Ripper deal with DRM?
Absolutely. Completely strips it out.
Well, I think from my perspective, the whole concept, I mean, the way they're doing it, I agree with fair use and all. But the problem is if a hacker wants to, you know, strip off some DRM, they will do that.
They'll do it anyway.
I mean, you're making it just harder on the normal consumer. And the normal consumer will go online and start to, you know, learn and read and, you know, get to know how things are done. And you'll make a hacker out of it.
I mean, well, I don't know. You might be giving the normal consumer a little too much credit.
No, I don't think so. I think he's absolutely right. I think that pervasive DRM turns people into hackers. I think it, when you start taking away fair use, I mean, if I go out and buy, and I use this example in the descriptor for my review, if I go out and buy Garfield 2, A Tale of Two Kittens for my 3-year-old.
I won't ask why you did.
Well, my 3-year-old loves Garfield movies, so.
Yeah, so does my son Peter.
Yeah, so I went and got it, and the original one got scratched, and I had to replace it. Why should I have to go to the store and buy another copy when it's simply digital media? If I would have made a copy, and she only watched the copy, and I kept the original, and if she ruins the copy, I don't care. I can just burn another copy for her.
Right.
What's wrong with that? I've already paid for the movie. It's mine. If I bought it and wanted to use it as a Frisbee, that would be fine, but I can't use it to make another copy, so I'm protected in case I lose it.
Well, you should be able to make a copy. I mean, you're right. I was speaking more along the lines of like the type of DRM that you get with iTunes, where, you know, even though you've purchased copyrighted materials, you're allowed to burn that song, really, you know, you have to change playlists every once in a while, but you're allowed to burn that song as many times as you want or as many times as you need.
And if I think actually, that's fair.
Certainly. And if you absolutely have to, you can, you know, once you've burned it to a CD or a DVD, you have an analog copy there, or a copy of, sorry, not an analog copy. You have a copy that, that you can put back into iTunes.
You have a digital non-DRM copy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
That's what I was so badly trying to say. Okay.
Since we're talking about DRM, I still cannot get what the Europeans have, you know, what the grudge they have against iTunes and the iPod and the whole DRM thing. I can't get it. I'm reading all the news, but I don't get the where's the point? Where's their problem exactly?
Go ahead, Guy.
I actually had an article on the blog side that I kind of talked about this, and one of the questions that I asked in the article was if Apple was at 20% of the market instead of 60 to 80% of the market, would anyone care? Would this even come up?
No, and they would be going after whoever the market leader is. I don't think that it's because it's Apple, iTunes, or the iPod that they're going after them. I think it really comes down to their opinion that, you know, if you're going to buy music on the iTunes music store, you should be able to play it on any device that you want to. It shouldn't be limited to just the iPod. And in general, I agree with that. I do. But in practice and in the real world, why would Apple want to allow their music to be played on a Creative MP3 or a Dell jukebox?
They've built this very, very successful business from the ground up. You know, they didn't use anyone else's stuff to kind of get this going. Well, never mind. I won't go there. But they went from zero to being the market leader. And why should they be penalized for being successful?
Microsoft could say the same thing, though. But the difference being that they've used their market dominance to crush competition and to, in some respects, act illegally. They've done things that they're not supposed to do.
And Apple has not.
Or
the only thing the only thing Apple's done is not license Fair Play. That's the only thing Apple has done that could be considered
anti-competitive.
Yes, thank you.
What about Audible? They use it.
They use AAC.
No, don't they use the same copy protection when you can buy their audiobooks in iTunes?
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They do. I think you have to authorize it through iTunes and stuff like that. But here's the thing. If you look at iTunes 7, it has changed from iTunes 6. Now iTunes 7 is the software that you can control the iPod through. Of course, 6 and 5 and, you know, back and forth. I mean, it does the same thing. But now everything goes through iTunes 7. I think this is a way. Apple is just leading a way to, you know, convince whomever that, hey, this product as software is connected directly to this hardware. I mean, the connection has changed from iTunes 6 to iTunes 7. Don't you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Here's a question. Is iTunes to Apple, is iTunes more important than the Mac OS X now?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, because, I mean, if you read all the reports, they're barely making money out of it. I mean, they're just selling the hardware. That's where the money is for Apple.
Right, but the Mac OS isn't selling the hardware. iTunes is, the ability to buy music, TV shows, movies, and very soon we'll be able to stream that wirelessly to our televisions through the Apple TV.
Right.
But again, that's going through iTunes. So is iTunes... I still think the Mac OS is more important to Apple, but I think there's no question the number two application for Apple is iTunes.
Well, you think iTunes is due for a name change?
No. I agree with Mazin, it should, but I think it's been there for so long that they're kind of stuck with it. And here's something else to throw in there. When the iPhone comes out a year from now, if they've sold, you know, 10 billion of those things,
they will.
And they're going to sell a ton of them. What application talks to the iPhone?
Yeah, I mean, where's the...
Actually, we don't know that yet.
Yes, we do. It's iTunes. He showed it on iTunes. The stage. It is iTunes.
Yeah.
It shows up in iTunes.
It's iTunes for your content.
What else is the iPhone for? It's the content.
You can call people, I guess.
I mean, I think, yeah, you're right, Tim. The iTunes is taking over. I mean, it's controlling the Apple TV. It's controlling your iPod. It's controlling the iPhone. I mean, what is iSync doing, really? I mean, if you look at it, that application is not doing much.
No,
so iSync is iSick?
For Mac. I mean, .Mac, that's it. But
That is, well, yes, yeah, that's pretty much it. Because I use .Mac, and I do have a family photo album up there on .Mac, but...
That's an expensive family photo album.
Yeah, and I don't use the email service. I just have it auto-forward to publisher@mymac.com, and the only thing I ever get through there is spam.
Yeah.
But really, the only thing I use it for is to sync bookmarks and the like through my various Macs.
Actually, I'm just looking at the iSync right now, and it has the .Mac button on it. Once you click it, it tells you to open the .Mac preferences, so you don't need it anyway.
No, you don't. Because you can put .Mac right on your hard drive. You can mount it.
That's right. Yeah.
Anybody else notice? And I think Donnie Yankolo was the one to mention in a blog on mymac.com that .Mac seems a lot faster than it used to.
I haven't really noticed, but I very rarely go to the .Mac site directly.
Yeah.
I have an account there, but I haven't noticed any difference. Although, of course, the mail... online mail account is, you know, different, the interface, but otherwise it's kind of the same to me.
I think .Mac needs a massive overhaul. And here's something strange. Here we go talking about the iPhone again, but Apple's not using the .Mac services for the mail on the iPhone. They're using Yahoo and they're using Google. Or no, they're just using Yahoo for mail, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, but when I watched the keynote, there was a mention that you can sync. If you look at the keynote in the back, behind Steve Jobs, you can see that it syncs even your Mac account Mac email account with the iPhone through Mail app or something. So it would sync the Mac accounts and Yahoo and Gmail. So it's up to the user to decide which account he wants to sync. I think that's my...
I'm not sure, because they were talking about the push technology in the Yahoo Mail, which, right. You know, you don't literally have to go out and check your mail when you get it. It's pushed to your device. It's pushed to your cell phone. So it's instant mail instead of going, okay, every 5 minutes, like you have to use the mail application now or Entourage or whatever. You literally have to go and check your email. It doesn't just pop in when it's, you know, when it's sent.
Or then, ask it to sync every now and then, or
exactly,
whatever.
Absolutely. So
I think from one way or the other, this kind of alliance is just an approach to get into the BlackBerry's market somehow. It's like offering people more options to get something like the BlackBerry kind of service.
Let's go back to Saudi Arabia for a little bit before we wrap this up. How many other Mac users have you met in Saudi Arabia now?
I've met maybe, I switched about 12 or 13 people so far. I switched them myself. And I met another 12, I guess. And I'm trying to meet the rest of them. I'm trying to, you know, attend all their gatherings and get to know them more.
What are they excited about when it comes to the Mac OS? Why are people switching in Saudi Arabia? Is there certain applications that they really like on the Mac, or...
Well, let me tell you what I do, really, to help someone to switch. Last weekend, I had a friend of mine, and I was showing him the Mac. He's a Windows user or PC user.
I'm sorry.
I told him, okay, listen, I'll get my Mac, and I'll show you everything. And I started to show him some applications, no eye candy effect whatsoever. Okay, I'm just showing him the applications. And right. All of a sudden, I just hit the expose, and the guy was like, oh, my God, what is this? Yeah, and I start to move things very fast, and the dashboard coming in and out of the widgets and all that. And the guy was going like, okay, I'm starting to get a headache. This is too fast for me. And I was like, well, you can work faster. You can be more productive when you use Macs rather than using PCs and going to your taskbar and, you know, flipping through the... you know, applications up and down and all that. So he's convinced, and he called me up the next day and he said, listen, I'm going to buy a Mac. I don't care. I just want it. And we ordered one for him. It should be arriving by tomorrow, I guess. No, day after tomorrow, actually.
What kind is he getting?
He's getting a MacBook, a white one. You know, he's trying to test it out at first, but I'm sure after he gets that MacBook, I mean...
It's all over then.
Yeah, it's all over then.
I highly recommend the 24-inch iMac.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. So do you still actively try to get people to switch, a guy?
You know, I work at the State Department. No, I shouldn't have said that. Never mind. where I work, there's, you know, almost everyone there is either Windows, there's a couple of Linux guys, and they know I'm the resident Mac head.
Yeah.
So anytime there's any type of misstep by Apple, they always make sure that they stop by my cube to give me some crap. But for the most part, when people come up and ask me anything about computers, you know, I basically say, look, I'm a Mac guy, but I'm going to tell you this. Use the computer that you're most comfortable with, that you can get most of your stuff done.
Exactly.
Yeah, I used to really push. A lot of people always knew that, well, they still do. They know that I'm the computer guy. So for years and years, everybody would come to me with their computer questions. And I completely stopped helping any relative on the Windows side. I told them if they want my help, they got to buy a Mac. I'm just not going to support Windows for anybody anymore. It's just not worth it.
You know, I did the same thing, Tim.
Yeah, you have to.
I mean, I'm actually a certified Microsoft specialist, and I was a really dogmatic type of, you know, DOS head, as you can call it.
Well, what made you switch?
You won't believe it. It was a fourth-gen iPod that I saw, and I wouldn't touch an Apple product no matter what. And one day I was in Dubai and a Virgin store, and I just saw this iPod, and I picked it up, and I was just thinking, I mean, if a company could create their MP3 player with this high quality, what would their computers be like? I mean, if this is so easy, intuitive, and designed right, and it just feels good, how would their computers...
Works.
Yeah, and it works. And I just, you know, went back home, and I ordered it through Amazon. That's it. I never saw a Mac in my life in action, by the way. It was just a leap of faith. And that's it. It just, you know, flipped over.
So you actually, the iPod halo effect was absolutely
exactly.
True in your experience.
Exactly. I am the living halo effect, or the evidence that the halo effect exists.
So did you own an iPod before, or you just saw one?
No, I never would touch an Apple product back then. And I just saw one, and I mean, displayed in the store, and they were nice enough to keep it, you know, on display, and you could just hold it up and check it out. And that was it. I bought an iPod, and I bought a Mac.
Hmm. So, one of the things that I do, obviously, is help a lot of my relatives, and there's some clients that I help with the Mac, too, but I don't charge my relatives for help, obviously. one of the things that I've come to do is when they call me, I screen my telephone calls, and if I see it's one of my aunts or my Uncle Robert or somebody, I won't answer the phone. I'll let the answer machine get it, and invariably they have a question about the Mac. Hey, Tim, I have a quick question. I can't get it to do this, that, or the other. I usually wait about 24 hours now before I'll call them back. I'm trying to get them to be a little bit more self-reliant so they don't have to rely on me to figure out the problem. And honestly, once I started doing that about a year ago, 90% of the problems that they run into, they end up fixing themselves because they're pretty much forced to because I'm not helping them.
Do you do they listen to the podcast?
No.
Oh, thank God. Otherwise, you're busted.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank Mazen from coming on today. It is our pleasure to have you. And
oh, it's my pleasure. The pleasure is all mine, Tim.
It's 3:00 in the morning there. You're crazy and insane to stay up this late just to get on this
Talk
podcast.
To us.
But we really appreciate it. And
yes, we do.
The next time we have an opening, we've got some interviews coming up. We definitely want to bring you on and get you back on the show. You have a unique perspective. And we really appreciate you writing for the website as well. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you so much, Tim. And thank you, Guy. I mean, this
Oh,
was
you're welcome,
great.
Mazen.
I mean, really, this was worth it, staying up. I mean, I would stay up until 4 if you wanted. I'm enjoying myself, and this is fun,
well,
talking
before,
to friends.
Before we wrap it up here, let's go a quick rundown on what's going on at mymac.com. When we finally post this podcast on Monday, we'll have a couple new... Let's see what's coming up that's not up there right now. We've got a article called The Truth About Apple's Dealer in the Mideast. I wonder who wrote that one.
I'm not sure. No, it wasn't
me.
You
guy? It wasn't you. Okay.
Maxpiration. No, that'll come out next week. Thumbnails number 36 from Donnie's coming out, and we have a review of NewerTech's Universal Drive, and that's from Not Gullible. She's our new writer.
Yeah, I was going to say, make sure you mention her.
Yeah, she's brand new at MyMac.com. I don't want to give too much information about her yet. She's probably younger than most of our readers are going to imagine she would be. But where she is in life is simply an amazing story, and we're going to have her on the podcast here in the near future.
Yeah, I love the name.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That is funny.
Right now, of course, I talked about this earlier. I've got a review of the DVD-21X2, copying your commercial DVDs to blank media. So if you subscribe to Netflix, well, never mind.
Then you're screwed.
No, if you subscribe to Netflix,
I know.
Yeah, you could copy some. John Nemirovsky did a review of the Resolve 50A active powered small studio monitor speakers. Those look really interesting. It's from the same company, Samson, that his microphone is from, so that's pretty good. Not Gullible's first article, The Perfect Storm, why she thinks the Macintosh is on the verge of an explosion, and she gives five reasons why, which I happen to agree with all five of her reasons.
I read that, though.
Did you read that one yet?
Yeah, is it all? I think I read that, yeah. She had some really good points there.
Yeah, you responded in the article discussion, so I would imagine you read it.
Yeah, I think I read it.
Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, so you're forgiven. Yeah, you're probably getting a little drowsy. Punchy. Maxpiration number 70, even more system preference tips. You know, that's such a great Maxpiration. Everybody should be reading that. Even if you're a hardcore Mac user, there's always something new to learn, and Donnie's going to hit up on it, so...
Yeah, I'm hoping to get together with Donnie sometime in March. We'll talk about that another time.
Absolutely. And MacBook for Dummies from Artie. You know, Artie's another one of our new writers. He's doing just a bang-up job, and he's a recent switcher as well. So we've got a lot of new Mac users writing up at MyMac.com, which I think is fantastic because new Mac users is a growing demographic, and I think we're positioned real well to speak directly to those people. So that's fantastic.
In some cases, they could give a lot of input regarding, because they saw both sides, let's say.
Yes.
And they would have, you know, a different kind of perspective and why they really switched. And, I mean, it would be kind of inspiring in some cases.
I got to meet Artie at the Macworld Expo. He's a hell of a nice guy. Really, really enjoyed meeting him. Hopefully one of these years, we can have a friend from Saudi Arabia flying for the Macworld Expo. That would be fantastic.
Well, I wish I knew you a couple of years ago. I was in the U.S. I've been to Virginia and Boston before. But hopefully, yeah, very soon, I'm planning to fly to Canada. So if I might drop by.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump.
That's right.
Exactly.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Speaking of Apple... We do have a Apple Store visit coming up on March 10th, the MyMac.com podcast, which is going to be Chad Perry and myself. And it's a long shot, but maybe Guy Searle will show up there as well.
I want to go too.
One of the things that we're going to do during that podcast is going to be called the Apple Quiz. And it's basically we're going to ask some questions, history about Apple, and some questions. And the person who gets a question right is going to win a prize. You guys will not believe the list of prizes that we have. And I'm going to run through them real quick, and I want to thank all the sponsors for these.
Was it even more than what we had for the 100th podcast?
Oh, yes. And this is just what I've got so far.
Bring your truck.
We've got two copies of Microsoft Office. Excellent. That's $400 right there.
Each.
Well, each, exactly. We've got two of the Microsoft Wireless Laser Desktop Keyboard and Mouse. We've got one copy of Roxio Toast 8 from the Roxio Company. They also sent two copies of I think it's supposed to be ringtones. It's like X-I-N-G-T-O-N-E. X-ing-tone?
X-tony.
X-tone? I don't know. Version 5, we've got two copies of that. And Roxio also sent two copies of Popcorn. So that is very, very cool.
Wow.
Different this time, Guy, that we did not have when you were there, is we've got some books to give away as well. We've got from Wiley Publishing, MacBook for Dummies, which is the one that Artie just reviewed, And Artie gave it a 4.5 out of 5, so almost a perfect score. Wow. We're going to have that book to give away from Wiley Publishing. Also from Wiley Publishing, iMac for Dummies, iTunes, and iPod for Dummies, and the Garage Band book. So we've got, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4 books. I actually got them in the mail today.
Garage Band for Dummies.
No, this is called the Garage Band book from Tony Bove and Andy Anacco.
Okay, so no dummies are allowed to get that book.
That's right. Otherworld, okay, yep.
Sorry, I have a question.
Sure.
Hypothetically, if I was there right now, I mean, when you're going to the Apple store, can I win something or I'm
absolutely
not allowed? I'm not
technically you're not allowed, but as long as you weren't on the podcast with us, I would say that you would be eligible.
Okay.
I would
just checking.
You know what I would do is I'd give you a copy of the iPod and iTunes starter kit from Q Publishing. And that was written by Tim Robertson, so
that would be awesome.
I'm sorry, who was that again?
Yeah, some hack named Tim Robertson. Okay. MacSales.com is another one of the sponsors for this. And wait till you hear this stuff, guys.
Uh-oh.
They gave us a Mercury on-the-go bus-powered portable storage solution, 80-gigabyte hard drive, 7,200 RPM,
nice.
$199 value.
Was that the USB one or the FireWire?
That is the USB one and the FireWire one. It's both.
Oh, it does both?
Yes, it does. It does FireWire 800, 400, and USB 2.0.
Wow. Because I've got a USB 40 and a FireWire 80, and those things are godsends.
Yes, it's fantastic. They also sent a Mercury Elite Pro Quad Interface Storage Solution. That's $179 value. That's FireWire 800, 400, and USB 2. They sent this is really cool, a 250 gig mini stack version 2 external storage solution. That's the thing that looks like the little Mac Mini.
Right.
It's $149 value, 250 gigs. We're going to be giving that away at the Apple Store.
Now, that also has more USB and FireWire ports on it.
Yeah, it sure does. And you know, you don't have to just use this with a Mac Mini. I mean, you can use this with any Macintosh or PC.
I think you can also use it with the Apple TV or that new AirPort Extreme, is it?
Yes.
The new AirPort
Extreme. You set it up as a NAS.
Absolutely.
Wow.
They also sent, can you believe this, and both of these are a $35 value, they sent both a white and a black Traffic Jams wireless FM transmitter and iPod charger.
Oh,
so,
very sweet.
Unbelievable. Mac Sales have really stepped up in supporting the podcast, and they've given us some simply fantastic stuff that we're going to be giving away. That's right, giving away.
And we will be talking about these companies for almost every single podcast.
We got one more company. Griffin Technology sent us two of the iKaraoke, two of the iTrip Auto, and two of what I was talking about earlier, which I'm just enamored with, the iTalk Pro. So literally, we've got well over $2,000 worth of Mac goodness to give away March 10th at the Apple Store in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So if you're anywhere in the area, you're definitely going to want to show up for this. It's just a ton of free stuff that bone up on your Apple history. And
with all this stuff, this is going to be about, a three-hour podcast?
Yeah, it's going to be a long one. But this is what I was thinking. That's a lot of stuff to give away, no question.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about partnering up with a couple more companies. But it's not to give away at the store. It would be to give away to our listeners of the show, those people who can't show up at the podcast. All you're going to have to do, and this isn't set in stone yet, but if you want to get an early jump, if you're listening to the show and you want to get an early jump on this, simply send an email with your name, address, and phone number to contest@mymac.com. And while we're recording the next the show at the Grand Rapids store, some of the listeners will also win stuff. So you don't even have to be there.
Pull names out of a hat.
That's right. Now, you're not going to get the super expensive swag that you will if you're at the store, but this gives people that's at home a reason to listen to that podcast. So
that makes sense.
Well, besides our glorious voices.
Yes. And let's be honest, most of the people that listen to this podcast are nowhere in the West Michigan area, or they don't want to drive 5 hours to get here on the off chance that they may win something. But
maybe on another continent altogether.
There you go. Somewhere where there's a lot of heat.
I think I think Michigan's a bit out of your driving range, Mazda.
Yeah,
I don't think you're going to make it
there. Yeah, you better hit that ramp going about 7,000 miles an hour.
Coming up next on the podcast, we have John Nemirovsky. He's got his book, Bites Live, David Cohen's Fenestration, and we've got a review of a microphone from Robert Hazarig, so look forward to hearing all that. And I've got my review of the iTalk Pro. We're going to run a long podcast today, so we apologize for that, but there's a lot of information to get out there, and we just lost Guy Mazin.
Yeah, he's gone.
Where gone. Well.
He'll come back. He'll come back.
He'll come back. So that's our segment this week. We want to thank Small Dog Electronics for sponsoring the podcast. Check out smalldog.com. Everything that we just mentioned that we're giving away for free at the Apple Store, if you can't make it there, head up to smalldog.com and buy it, or go over to maxsales.com. They'll have a lot of this as well. Thanks a lot for coming on the show today, Mazin.
Thank you so much, Tim.
You noticed I said Mazin that time.
Yeah, I'm just, just ignoring all that. Don't worry about it. That'll be fine.
Thanks.
It's Mazin. Tim, it's Mazin. Mazin. It's easy. Mazin. Yeah, there you go.
I'm lazy. I'm just lazy.
That'll be fine.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, everyone. Take care.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world.
Now, welcome back to the show.
Welcome to Fenestration 22. My topic for this time is going to be discussing various versions of Windows and the versions you might want to use in your emulation or virtualization software on a Mac. My thoughts on this were prompted by a Joy of Tech cartoon that was sent to me by John Nemirovsky. The cartoon spoofed the various different versions of Windows Vista that are going to be available to buy. They number 7 or 8, and there's various different versions with various different types of functionality. What's interesting about Vista is that, in fact, all of the functionality is available on the files that are installed on your hard drive. However, the product key that you buy from Microsoft or receive in the retail box is going to control exactly what features you get. And you can upgrade your system at any time by ringing up Microsoft and paying some more money. They'll send you a different product key that will activate different versions of Windows Vista, all the way up to the Windows Ultimate Edition that has all the features. Now, Microsoft licensing has always been fairly confusing. I have a colleague who I used to work with who is currently working for Microsoft as a software licensing manager. Effectively, companies come to Microsoft and say, what does it mean with the new versions of software if we add new computers or change the versions of software we use? Yes, that's right. Microsoft has to employ special people to sit down and actually go through all the documentation and figure out what the licensing implications are, and to provide a bill to the customers. That's fine in corporate enterprise, where the margins are such that Microsoft can afford the overheads of employing specialist software licensing managers. Unfortunately, this sort of complex licensing has now been applied to the consumer space. What this means is, as I said, Windows Vista is available in a bewildering array of different versions and functionality. And what's also prevalent is that different license conditions can apply to different versions of Windows Vista. Take virtualization as an example. Depending on the version of Windows Vista you have, depends on whether you're allowed to take that copy of Windows Vista and run it on a virtual machine within your computer. This is of interest and concern to Mac users who are running Intel machines, because potentially they might want to have a bootcamp partition with Windows Vista in it, and yes, also run that same Windows Vista version in a parallel session. Depending on the license they've bought for Windows Vista, it's potentially a breach of the license agreement to do that on the same machine. Now, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that's a headache most of us can do without. So, my advice for the moment is, unless you particularly need to run something in Windows Vista, I wouldn't run it on a Mac. I would stick with Windows XP, where the licensing is much more straightforward. I have fired up Windows Vista on my machine, and it ran okay, but it didn't seem to run quite as smoothly as the version of Windows XP does on the same machine. You often find this with Windows. Unlike OS X, which actually increases in speed as you move up the version levels, with Windows it always seems that whenever you perform a Microsoft license upgrade, the machine slows down a little bit. This has been the same right the way through from Windows 98, Windows 2000, Windows XP, and now Windows Vista. Accordingly, if when I'm running Windows on a Mac, I always try and use only the version that I feel I absolutely need. For instance, if I don't need to run Windows XP, I'd be much happier running Windows 2000. It's not as feature-rich, but it does run a little bit quicker, and often speed can be everything. This is a useful thing to bear in mind, particularly if you're a PowerPC Mac user who wants to run Windows into Virtual PC. Windows 98, or Windows ME, runs much, much faster on Virtual PC than Windows 2000 or Windows XP does, purely because the overheads are less. Now, when you're emulating a whole Intel machine on a PowerPC, performance really can be very slow under Windows XP. I've got a dual 1.8 GHz G5 that I run Virtual PC, and really XP is not really usable unless I've just got a specific task I want to do and then jump straight back into OS X. I certainly wouldn't be able to feel like I'd be able to use it as a working environment. However, Windows 98 on a dual 1.8 GHz G5 doesn't run too badly at all, and it's much more responsive. So unless you're running something that specifically needs a later version of a Microsoft operating system, you might want to think about running something older. You can often pick up the disks for these operating systems quite cheaply on eBay if you go to an older version. And obviously, in terms of support, while if you go back too far, then you'll find things aren't supported at all. If you go back a medium period of time, you'll find that Microsoft, while they might not be actively supporting that operating system and producing new patches and software for it, you'll be able to find everything you need from the Microsoft website. And provided you're limited in terms of what you do with that operating system, it'll work really well for you. As an example, on the Virtual PC on my G5, I often want to read Microsoft .lit files. .lit is an ebook reader format that's a proprietary format specific to Microsoft. As you might imagine, there are no readers that can read these files on the Macintosh. However, what I can do is fire up Virtual PC, bring up a suspended Windows 98 session, and run a .lit conversion program that will convert the file into text under Windows. All I do is drag the .lit file into the Windows session, convert it, and drag the resulting text out, and then shut Virtual PC back down again. Of course, if you need a proper working environment, and you want to run something like Office 2007, then you're going to need something that works a bit faster, runs a later operating system than Windows 98, and obviously is something that you can actually work in on a regular basis. If you're in that position, then an upgrade to an Intel Mac and running a copy of Parallels or running the software on the boot camp is obviously an attractive proposition for an upgrade. However, even on an Intel Mac, you'll find that under Parallels, Windows 2000 operates substantially quicker than Windows XP, purely because the system overhead is less than Windows XP. Windows 2000 uses much less memory and is much more agile than Windows XP is because it doesn't have any of the clunky features that were bolted on at a later date. Of course, running Windows 2000 rather than Windows XP or Windows Vista means you don't get all the nice eye candy that came in the later versions of the operating systems. But then you're running on a Mac, so you don't really care about Windows eye candy. One important thing to note is obviously, you need to make sure that any drivers you need to run will work effectively under Windows 2000, and any software packages don't have any limitations. Of course, as well, you want to be very careful about internet connections and internet browsing, particularly when you're using older versions of Windows operating systems, because the older you go, generally the more susceptible they might be to malware and the sorts of things that are floating around on the internet. But of course, if you're running Windows on a Mac, then I would always recommend using your Mac as your internet browser and trying to avoid connecting Windows to the internet as much as possible.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in. And be sure to subscribe.
That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to David Cohen at mymac.com. Until the next time.
Ever wish you can record yourself on your iPod in pretty good quality audio? Hey, now you can. Griffin Technologies has sent the iTalk Pro over to MyMac.com to review. John Nemirovsky did the written review up at MyMac.com. You can go take a look at his review. He gives it a total 4 out of 5. And I'm going to do a little bit here on the podcast so you can actually hear the audio quality. I'm holding the iPod with the iTalk Pro plugged into the bottom of it, maybe a foot away from my face. Unfortunately, there's no meters on the iPod to tell me if it's spiking, if I'm talking too loud, the audio quality is too much. Really no way of measuring that, which is unfortunate, but that's probably more of a problem with the iPod than with the iTalk Pro. So we're going to basically plug this into the computer when I'm done recording and mount the iPod on my desktop, open up the recordings folder that's found within the iPod. There's going to be a WAV file, which is going to be this recording or any other voice memo that I take. The quality should be pretty good. We're going to drop it right into the podcast. That's how you're listening to this now. And check it out. So let's give it a listen, and you decide whether the iTalk Pro is something that you're interested in buying or not. For me, this is exactly something I've been looking for. It's going to be nice to be able to record a podcast segment anytime I want, if I'm in the car, in the bathroom. No, probably not in the bathroom, okay. But, you know, it's portable recording and in good high quality, so let's give it a listen.
Hello, Robert Hazelrig here. Today I'd like to talk to you about the Samsung CO3U USB mic pack. What the mic pack is a podcasting kit. It comes with software, which if you're on a Mac, you really don't need. A microphone, a USB cable, a microphone mounting stand, a shock mount, and I went out and purchased an additional pop filter. The pop filter is very important, especially for somebody like me who tends to enunciate my P's and S's very strongly. And what that does is it diffuses the wind as I speak. So when my voice hits the microphone, it doesn't actually get all distorted and peak. I'm sure many of you noticed that my voice quality has been enhanced the last couple of weeks since I've been using this microphone. I know a number of you have contacted me and said that this sounds much better than the microphone I was using previously. So far to date, I've been extremely happy with the microphone. It is a very high quality microphone at an inexpensive price. The microphone itself normally retails for about $130. But the podcasting kit, which includes the stand, the shock mount, and I forgot to mention earlier, the aluminum briefcase for carrying it around. It is a very nice briefcase, and it appeals to my geekdom. The briefcase looks very cool, and it is loaded with styrofoam that packs everything up nice and cozy and makes everything safe and secure for traveling purposes. Anyway, the full-blown kit retails for about $230. The microphone itself records in three different style of settings. There is the cardioid, the Omni, and the figure 8. I am currently recording in the Omni setting because I'm sitting in one location directly in front of the microphone, and that's giving me the best quality sound. Overall, I would say I am very happy with the microphone. I like the sound quality it's giving me, and I like the way it looks when it sits on my desk. It's very attractive. It sort of looks like an old-school microphone that you would see in a radio studio. So that's it for this week. That was the CO3U USB mic pack from Samsung Audio. That's Samson Audio. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
In the next two segments of Book Bites Live, which will be here on our MyMac podcast, number 116 and 117, we'll be having live interviews with two of the most important and most extraordinary Macintosh and Internet book authors of all time. So this week we want to go to our groaning shelves, the sagging shelves section of the Book Bites bin, and let you know of four books that will stand the test of time. You see, Adobe Photoshop CS3 is going to be released very soon, and when that comes out, all the graphics professionals and the artists are going to be very, very concerned about which books they're going to need to replace. Well, I have found four books, one each, from four different publishers that you will not need to replace anytime soon. These are excellent titles that you're going to want to keep in your library at least through the duration of CS3 and probably beyond. The first one comes from O'Reilly Media. The author is Pring, P-R-I-N-G, Roger Pring. The book is called Photoshop Filter Effects Encyclopedia. And by the way, all the ISBNs and other book information links will be on our show notes. This is the best book of all time for Photoshop users, really the only book that shows for every single filter in Photoshop where they are and how they work, giving two-page illustrations of how those filters work. And this book costs $30 in the U.S., $42 in Canada. Photoshop Filter Effects Encyclopedia, the hands-on desktop reference for digital photographers. This book lives next to my computer whenever I'm working on Photoshop. It is absolutely unequaled. A book that is much bigger and fatter is the Photoshop CS2 Wow book by Linnea Dayton and Kristen Gillespie. This book is absolutely a doorstop, as my colleague David Weeks calls it, almost 800 pages. And what this book includes hundreds of before and after tutorial files, layer styles and patterns, actions, gradients, custom tools, and other goodies. And it even has a companion Mac Windows DVD-ROM. This one is a little more expensive. Boy, is it worth it. It's from Peach Pit Press. Cost is $60 U.S., $75 Canada, and £43 U.K. Photoshop CS2 Wow Book by Dayton and Gillespie. It is massive. The illustrations are spectacular. And I guarantee by the time you go through this book, you will definitely be able to audition for the Photoshop Dream Team. Now, if you like to chop people's heads off from one picture and put them on another picture, and you want to do what's called masking and compositing, where you actually isolate portions of pictures and then you redirect them to other parts of other pictures. In other words, you know what you're doing if you're masking and compositing. This is intermediate and advanced stuff. There's a book called Photoshop Masking and Compositing by Katrin Eisman, E-I-S-M-A-N-N. This is from New Writers Press. Again, a little bit pricey, $55 U.S., $79 Canadian, and £42 U.K., but it's a large format book, 545 pages with gorgeous, gorgeous illustrations. I mean, there's almost more image than text, but the text is absolutely brilliant. Recipes and lessons and numbered instructions that will help you become the world's expert at masking and compositing. Photoshop Masking and Compositing by Eisman from New Writers Press. And the last one is a little bit whimsical, but it's actually one that I use in my teaching. It's probably the best book for teaching if you're a beginner intermediate. It's called Photoshop CS2 Before and After Makeovers. The publisher is Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, and the author is Taz Talley, T-A-Z-T-A-L-L-Y. He's got a great sense of humor, and the layout and the design of this book, if you want to see the before and the after on your Photoshop creations, really wonderful. Wiley is the publisher. The cost on this book is $30 U.S., very affordable, $39 Canadian, and £20 United Kingdom. That's Photoshop CS2 Before and After Makeovers. Blah before and amazing afters. So I want to recommend these four titles. If you are able to find them at a discount, which you quite possibly can, you'll definitely be getting your money's worth. But if you own these titles or if you want to learn more about Photoshop filters or really great wow techniques, masking and compositing, or for more beginners, intermediates, the before and after makeovers, I can give each of these books, our Book Bites, a recommendation. And we will be back for Book Bites Live with interviews with two very famous and exceptional authors starting in our next two episodes of Book Bites Live here on the MyMac.com podcast. Thanks for listening. And if you like my audio quality, I'm sure you know that Robert and I are both doing our podcast tapings now, if you call it a taping. We're both using the Samson CO3U USB microphone. So thanks to Samson for providing these microphones. John Nemo signing off. Be back next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.